tell you, I'm very, very, very happy to be meeting Marcel Kuhn. And the thing I really love is that going through your material and some parts of your book, I am inspired. I'm absolutely inspired because deep in my heart and soul, I've always thought this thing of, you know, I'm the only one in the universe with this job. Why am I not? I guess going back to what you were saying about what is success or why, how am I going to become successful? And then I jump back to talk to you and say, let's talk about what success really is. Is success unthinkable, as you've called your book? Where did you get a term like unthinkable? Is it that we think ourselves into oblivion? Talk to me, Marcel. This is a very exciting subject.
I think for my whole life, I've looked for success, how to be successful. And I had a feeling inside of me that I was not good enough. So I have this deep hunger in me to be successful and to chase, right? So that was my life, my whole life. And so
to
when
chase,
I start
success, is that what you're meaning there?
Yeah. I wanted to chase the conventional success. That's okay. What I had a deep hunger for that. Because I think I come from a family that is really successful. My great uncle, he invented the pressure cooker.
Oh wow.
In 1947 or 49.
Does that mean you grew up in a pressure cooker?
Yeah, I grew up around so my family had a family business for generations, and so I grew up around this legacy of my grandfather and great uncle who built this company, and then my father led it forward. And as so I was around conventional success, and they did something really great with it. So they the mindset of the family was to do well and do good for others, right? So that was the philosophy. So in the 1960s they facilitated for Tibetan refugees to get housing and jobs in the company, and then they built the monastery. And they actually, in collaboration with His Holiness, they built the monastery or institute. It's called the Institute a few monks were living in Switzerland for the Tibetan community, and it's the biggest Tibetan library in Europe. So it's that's kind of what I grew up, what I witnessed.
Did you study Tibetan philosophy and so on?
No, not at all. But I guess so. I always say this: when you ask a fish, what do you think about water, or what do you think about the ocean, he will tell you maybe not so much, because it's just what the fish lives in, right?
Sure.
So, and for me, because I was surrounded by this, it was just kind of part. It was just what we did as a family, or mm-hmm. as a larger family. And I think only later I realized what the legacy of that, and the kind of interest of doing something for other people, outside of myself. And so that's how I grew up in this kind of family.
Good. And it's helpful, isn't it? Yeah, I like that.
Yeah, it's just very interesting. But I only realized that in the last few years, because as I said, I was always thinking I was not good enough. Mm-hmm. I had this in me, and no one ever gave me a reason to think that, but I just felt like that. And so I was always chasing success, at the conventional success, and then I had this idea of writing this book, and the title came to me. We had a family tragedy; someone passed away at a really young age, and it just being faced with mortality makes something with you. Most people are just sad.
It's a good thing in a way, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, but most people are sad and just like a deer in headlights, right? you don't know what to do. You're so sad. I was sad too, of course. And then I went into something different. At the funeral, I asked myself, why are some people so successful and fulfilled, and other people are not living an exciting or fulfilled and successful life? So this question at the funeral actually turned into the idea for a book. Mm-hmm. And never before I wanted to write a book, but the title that came to me was Achievers, 1,000 Ways to Success and Fulfillment. And I wanted to go out there and interview 1,000 achievers worldwide. That was my idea. But as I did interviews and I started not having an idea, so within 5 minutes, I had the title and 10 questions. And I pretty much stayed with the same questions throughout all the interviews. And after about 60, I stopped because I had so much material as so many, 60 people. I had like 5 books of materials in transcripts.
Wow.
So I had 250,000 words in transcript. This is about 5 non-fiction books.
This isn't your book Unthinkable, is it?
So this book that I had then turned into the book Unthinkable. So I actually, the one I wanted to write, I never published because you go through a journey, you experience things, and suddenly what you set out to do is something totally different, and that's how it was in my case.
It's almost like you stirred a big pudding by having all those interviews, and then you came up with the major ingredients that it takes.
Yeah. Yes. So what I saw, what they had in common, those people I interviewed, was doing the unthinkable. That's how I came up with this term.
Okay. And what does that mean, doing the unthinkable? Something I would never assume I could do, is that?
So if something is unthinkable, you cannot think of it, so it's impossible.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So to make the unthinkable happen, you have to be able to think it first before it becomes reality. Maybe you're aware of the Kabbalion.
Mm-hmm. I am very much so, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So the first principle of the 7 hermetic principle is everything is mental. And so to have something created, it has to be imagined first or thought of first.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel almost that unthinkable now sounds limiting because it's still the thinking, so it's a logic mind. But when you're, for me, doing the unthinkable is dropping from the mind to the heart. So for me, the mind, the logic mind, is very it's in a box. It's predictable. It's linear, and I feel when you're in the heart, you're more you're in the field of the limitless potential.
Mm-hmm. So intuition and things that come to you from all kinds of sources. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. So the when I started the book, my assumption was that you have to be successful first to be fulfilled. Right. So I thought, like my grandfather, great uncle, you have to have a successful company, and then you can give to others. But I realized in the last few years that actually you know that there is like 2 sides of the coin. Like the one is success and the other one is fulfillment. Like fulfillment is more being connected to your purpose and to be happiness and being your true self. So that's for me, my book that I wrote is about stepping out of the thinkable life, which is the life that you feel you need to live from society, from your peers, from education, from the military. That's kind of the thinkable life. So have family, have a successful career, and do check off all the boxes. That's what I call a thinkable life. And then stepping out of this and being more, living more into your purpose. That's for me the unthinkable life.
I love that. You have to be it through.
Yes, and your question, it's not about climbing Mount Everest or doing crazy stuff. It's not about that. The unthinkable can be yeah, it's different for everyone. It's personal. So for you, it can be something totally different than for me, right? For me, it's unthinkable to write the book when someone passed. That's unthinkable. And it's unthinkable to not have ever written book and not have ever done interviews. Just go out there and interview 60 people from around the world, which out of those 60
Brilliant.
People, I didn't know. I only knew four of them, and it through the 6 degrees of separation, I met more and more people, and they recommended me to other people. So it's I created a network out of this, and you know, just so this was my unthinkable.
I love that. It's actually very, very inspiring, all that you did. Do you think, I mean, to say, ask you some sort of interesting questions. How do you feel about humanity? Do you feel like we all, each of us has our own purpose that is quite different one to the other? What do you think of us as a unit, as humankind as a unit?
Yeah, I feel that... everyone has the unthinkable, if we keep this terminology, everyone has something inside that is special.
Okay.
And so I was in the corporate, just to make an example, I was in the corporate for lean management. So I was doing continuous improvement within companies, so like an internal consultant. And when I left my job, when I stepped out of my thinkable life and went into the unthinkable, and it takes them about, you know, a week or so to find someone new who does this role, right, because you're really replaceable. Anyone is
replaceable. Yeah.
You're
yeah.
very replaceable, but when you're true to the unique gift that you have, you're not replaceable like that, because you're unique.
Mm-hmm.
And there is I always use the metaphor of waves and surfing an ocean.
Mm-hmm.
And each wave is different. There is no two waves alike. There are waves that are similar, but there is no wave that is exactly the same. So I think what I want to teach and coach and inspire people to be their unthinkable and follow their purpose. And that means that they're their best version of themselves. And for me, unthinkable is always connected to catching your dreams. So living your dreams. So unthinkable, a tsunami in New York is unthinkable, right? But but the creating something that is unthinkable, that doesn't mean it's great, right? But if it's connected to your purpose and being your best self, then it's meaningful. You know, you can jump.
The thing about the waves, the surfing, that made me think about it a lot is that no waves are the same, right? But also every time you go through a wave, you have to rebalance, you have to allow yourself to move forward, you have to really get conscious about it, don't you?
It's yes, and I call this surrender, right? It's not giving up, but it's giving in. And I always say this with the example of my background. Everyone wants to surf the wave out there, the perfect wave. Everyone wants to be there. And most people are stuck between the wave out there and the shore. You know, we are just paddling and paddling. And if you fight the wave, you always lose, because the wave is always stronger. Even the smallest wave is stronger than you. So in life, I always talk about the waves of life.
Mm-hmm.
Like we have wipeouts, we have waves, you know. You know, like opportunities are waves, but also challenges are waves, because it's actually the same. The same mm-hmm. can be an opportunity as well as, you know, a really big challenge.
Do you think that we have opportunities that wave into our consciousness because of who we are uniquely? I mean, do you think that life appears to us or starts to move through us? Do you see what I'm saying?
I'm not sure. Can you expand more?
I'm just thinking, you know, that we're all different. And I know that I'm very conscious of that. I'm an intuitive, you know, and it's very exciting when people live into who they really are. And I felt like when you were talking about waves, gee, it's as if because your friend or relative died and you were really shaken, because we do get shaken by grief. Grief often makes it become something, doesn't it? And does that mean that you had something lurking in there already that had to flow out because of the crisis that you went through? And do we all have that?
Yeah,
you don't answer that as the honest truth, just like it's an idea, isn't it?
Yeah, I think in Japan, I also mentioned this in my book, they talk of the fortune of misfortune. And I think when someone passes, you like, people don't like that you say that someone passing is builds opportunity. And I think for me, it's the what it was already inside me what came out. Mm-hmm. But sometimes you need a external crisis to elevate yourself. Mm-hmm. So sometimes you need to go through a difficult wave to be better. Or be your true self.
So, or to shine, to refine us, like going through a process of refinement.
Mm-hmm. So you maybe heard of this this analogy of Da Vinci with his David statue?
No, I didn't.
So there is there was a rock, and he created David, which is like the it's in it's in Venice, no, not Venice, Florence. Mm-hmm. So it's the perfect piece of art, the David statue, and he made it out of a block, right? That everyone said it can't be used, it's rubbish, right? And he made this perfect statue out of this. So for me, personal development, when I started, I always thought I needed to be someone else, but I realized that personal development is becoming more of who you are. So like Da Vinci, he took away everything that was not needed. He took away, and that's how I see. So getting rid, unschool, get rid of all the things that we were taught by society. Get rid of it until we become our true self. So that's what I see as personal development.
And let that's me ask kind of you something. I love that, actually. I want to be optimistic and say, do you think that it's possible that as a species, we will evolve with that kind of personal integrity ruling what the markets are developing and, you know, how countries will develop? That's my idealism. What do you think?
Yeah, I'm an idealist. I was.
It's a wonderful thing to be an idealist, Mark.
Yeah, So my dad is really idealist, and so sometimes being idealist is a curse when you just want to make money. But yeah. I think there is a way of making money in a way that is, you know, ethical. So yeah, I believe that we are
it could
in a great
be a
time.
Win-win for a lot of people, right?
Yes.
Even though it's you doing it, for example.
Yeah, so that's what I'm working for, to live my dream. I live my dream right now. I live my dream life. Mm-hmm. Yet I'm not financially there where I want to be. Mm-hmm. But I think we are on the journey, and it takes a lot of courage to step out of the thinkable life. For me, it would be much easier to live in the thinkable life. I could get the job I had, I could get easily right now in 1 week or 2 weeks, and I would earn really well and have no worries. But I would have to worry to not live how I want to live.
I want to ask you another thing, which is, how do you define the word security? Because to me, I'm always thinking about that. What is security really?
Okay, yeah, so that doesn't exist.
Exactly.
And
but
so
also you're talking about it from your perspective, which is, I know I wouldn't be happy. Or go back to your other word that you chose a while back, which was success. You would not be successful.
Yes.
For you, right?
Yeah. So I always talk in the book, I talk about the illusion of control, right? Having a pension, having a salary, that's all great. Yet it's only an illusion of control, because the company can decide today that you are no longer needed.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, in Switzerland, we have a good pension, so you're safe, you know, you're insured and all that. But it's just, there is no safety, because you don't know if you actually reach this age. So in Switzerland, as a guy, you have to work until 65, then you get a pension. But mm-hmm. you don't know if you will be alive at 65. You don't know that. So that's, you cannot count on that. And you don't know if you will have the right health to enjoy. Because some people say, I don't live the life I want to live. But when I'm 65, I finally can live the life I want to live. But then you don't maybe have the health that you want. Mm-hmm. Like my grandfather, he was healthy until 95. And he was early retired. So from 62 to 95, he was retired, and he was just doing all the things that he loved doing, like mountain climbing and just being an amazing grandfather. And but not everyone has the luxury to be healthy until he passes.
Mm-hmm. It's been really interesting, though. I wonder, I don't know, what are your sons like? You've got sons, right?
Yes, I got three boys, mm-hmm. and I'm in the situation where I'm a divorced dad, so I have the kids with me, you know, like you know, some time. So we have shared custody, so I have it like 30%, and mm-hmm. yeah. So what my mission is to share them, to teach them my values, what I feel. What I feel I want to have them, I don't know. I want to create the perfect environment for them to live the kind of value I feel important now. And we cannot really force anything onto. You can just live by example. So I like the Sufi philosophy. In Sufism, they actually say that the children are guests in your life. And that's how I see it. So I don't want to say my children, because mm-hmm. I feel they came into my life, and I just want to give them an environment that they can flourish. So like a plant needs the environment, needs the right humidity, needs the right nutrition. So my purpose in being a dad is you know, showing them that I catch my dreams, showing them that I have a strong relationship with myself, like self-love, self-care, and then allowing them to have the relationship with themselves, so self-love and self-care, and catch their dreams. So that's my mission as a dad, is to go out there and catch my dreams, but also show them and give them the environment for them to feel safe. Mm-hmm. And safe is a feeling that only can come from the inside. So a safety, if you don't feel safe inside, you cannot feel safe, how much money you have, you know. So it's always related to the inside. So mm-hmm. even if I feel I'm struggling, I have to be calm. I have to be calm and grounded for them to feel safe around me, you know, to mm-hmm. because it's about self. The relationship to yourself is the foundation for everything, right? So if you don't love yourself, you don't have the, you know, the self-respect, the self-confidence, self-belief. So it's all really based on the self-love and self-care.
And were you brought up with that, Marcel?
I was brought up with a lot of love.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel for a lot of my time, because I didn't feel good enough, I didn't really love myself. So I looked for completion outside, and only in the last 3 years I'm really grounded in self-love and self-care. So it's a daily practice. So self-care.
How come you didn't feel as loved when you were small? What? Because that happens to a lot of us.
Yeah, right? I don't know. I have no evidence that I wasn't loved. It was just something I had inside. I, because I've, I grew up with the most loving parents, and they are so supportive, and we have the most beautiful relationship. So there is no evidence that I wasn't loved.
But what's really interesting to me is that we're all born with a certain kind of packet of ideals, are we not? At least that's how I see it. It's like we have things to work out in this life, every one of us, right? Maybe that's just what some people have to work out.
Yes.
Right? Is finding your own self-love. I love this concept that what we're talking about, like success. You were not taught that success was a certain thing as a child, were you? And are you teaching your children that success is them coming to terms with who they really are? Or are you teaching them, I don't know, how do you inculcate values in little kids, you know?
Yeah. So my kids are 6, 8, and 10. So these are very, very interesting ages. And I feel, it's very important for me to share the values, and I can only share them by living them. That's the only thing you can do is live your values.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not perfect, and my values are, it's like a North Star, right? And like a road has lines on the side. So, you know, okay, this is your values and you want to go there. And okay, now you cross the line. Okay, so I didn't live my values, so I have to go back. So that is what I teach my kids, right? We have values, and sometimes we fail because we are human. So sometimes we don't follow our values. So then we have to move back. So it's kind of a spectrum, right? That I want to move in. And for me, it's really important to have the same standards for my kids as for me.
Good.
So, we don't have double standards. So this means I cannot tell my kids that they have to drink water and I have a beer in the evening.
Yeah.
Right? Because that's double standard. So I don't think that's good for teaching ethics and for teaching equality.
Mm-hmm.
So that's really important for me. And in my house, I don't accept talking bad about other people. So no judgment in my house.
Mm-hmm.
And I teach it like that. If you point the finger towards someone, three fingers point back at you, right? So if you do that. And I always say, if you talk negative about someone else, it comes threefold to you. So because the subconscious,
like that's really important. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So the subconscious doesn't know who you talk about, if you talk about yourself or if you talk about someone else. Mm-hmm. So we have to be really careful that we don't talk bad about other people. So I always say, if you say bad things about other people, it comes back threefold. So three times bad. And if you talk good about other people, it comes back threefold. So that's just a simple analogy to teach them the importance of non-judgment. And this is something I learned from my parents. There is no judgment.
No, that's
so
wonderful.
My parents talk about other people in a way like I do now. It's like I'm so inspired by this person. You know, this person did this, and this is so exciting. So in our family, we always talked about ideas and concepts and inspiration, but never about, oh, you know, this annoying person did this, and, you know, like gossiping.
Right.
So I think that's what I learned from them. And our house was always open. We had guests from around the world. We have people staying from Tibet, from Korea, from the States, from
well,
so
that
many.
That was a very expanding way to grow up, wasn't it?
Yeah. So yeah. I grew up in a small valley, but because my family brought the Tibetans, the Tibetan community, so this was unthinkable because there was no outsider, and then you have a whole group of Tibetans coming in. So this was disruptive. And then it was just really expensive. My family also, on the other side of my grandfather, they emigrated to Argentina on my mother's side.
Okay.
So my grandfather on the mother's side, they spent 6 years in 3 years in Argentina and 3 years in Uruguay. So the whole family was quite open-minded, even though even though like some places in Switzerland are quite, you know, quite local. But I grew up very open-minded in that way.
All right, let's fast forward now that you've done your book, Unthinkable, and you never did finish the first book, which is replete with many wonderful interviews. So I'm sure you'll tap that for your consciousness for the rest of your life. Hey.
Yes.
So what do you do to serve? I know you do a number of things, but what do you do to incorporate or teach people what you've learned and how to inspire them? I mean, reading your stuff, I just went, I feel like I could conquer whatever because I have the courage, because I have the drive deep down. Not just a drive or the perfection, not that. More like an enthusiasm, a heart, yeah.
Yes, so the mission with the book is to make people get out of their thinkable life and live their unthinkable life. So that's a mission, to inspire people.
Well, it works.
Yeah, and so I want to build programs and courses around this. So I've done some webinars and courses like that and coaching.
Mm-hmm.
And so I want to do different things. And so one is the one-on-one coaching for people who are open to expand beyond their current limitations. So it's mm-hmm. it's really that you have to be open to expand. So that's one.
They're afraid. You work with them. You help bring them out of their fear. Is that right?
Yeah. Yes. But there is no change if you are not ready for change. Right.
Right.
Because I worked in corporate. I was leading change for 16 years in corporations, and as long as there is no internal stoke that you can spark, or a seed inside, yeah, you cannot make anyone change. So I think that's the reason why corporate initiatives often fail,
mm-hmm.
because when the leader that leads initiatives leaves, then it all falls apart. Because it cannot be maintained by, you know, top down. Change
only
happens. I
think there's a kind of a fear, or at least in my awareness, is like when people are afraid of the loss of any security, they don't want to change.
Yes, exactly.
You know what I mean? People get stuck. We all do, right?
Yeah, we all do.
Yeah, how do you teach them?
Yeah. So I just want to finish the first question. So I want to help one-on-one with coaching, and I want to help groups with coaching, and I want to do speaking for corporates and do workshops with corporates. That's kind of what I want to do. So all based around my books, the concept of unthinkable.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I want to do. And yeah, how do we change? How can we change? So that's a big question. Right, mm-hmm. because the ones that are already doing it, they're the ones that are hungry to learn more. And the ones who don't want to change, they don't read books and they don't care about this. But
say more about that. When the people that are hungry for change always want to do more. Why is that? Is it because we're kind of an infinite species, or what is that?
Yeah, I don't know the reason for that, but I worked a lot. So in my 16 years of doing that, I always saw there were some people who are so hungry, and, mm-hmm. and with them it was really easy. So it was effortless. They were just hungry for change. So it was really easy to work with them. And the ones who are not interested, they just don't have the bandwidth maybe not the right vibration to work like that. But I think what really helps is through inspiration, right? So see other people achieve great things, that really helps to open the mind what can be possible. So even if you just open the door a little bit, some light comes in, and we start to, you know, to expand our thinking. And something really simple I teach is, you know, a disruptive question. like ask yourself
love your business on disruption. I love that.
Yeah. So,
go
so
ahead. Talk
the
about
disruptive
it.
Question. So you can many people live in victim mentality, and I lived like that for a long time, right? Victim mentality is like we feel that our boss should, you know, should I always thought my boss, my manager, he should invest in my training, right? He should invest, and he didn't. So I felt, okay, he's just not a good leader. But you have to take it in your own you have to take it in your own hands. But when you're in victim mindset, you always blame everyone around you.
Sure.
And mm-hmm. and even if you're in a situation that is not all you're making, you created this reality. So even if you're in a, you know, if you're in a relationship that doesn't work out, or if you're in a job that doesn't work, if you have a boss that, you know, that is not supportive, you created that reality. So take ownership. And then I like this disruptive question, and I have it right in front of me.
Yes.
It's a picture I painted from it's like really a big picture, and it's an astronaut that I drew. And the question is, what did you disrupt today? Or this is kind of my daily question. How can I disrupt myself today? So how can I get out of my comfort zone? And it can be really something really small. Like when you go to the grocery store, you probably will get the same, you will walk the exactly the same walk through the grocery store, and you will buy exactly the same toothbrush, toothpaste, you will buy the same vegetables, the same pasta. It will be the same, right? And
yes.
So you can disrupt your
mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's yeah. And of course, the habits are great. Habits are great. And if they're healthy habits, it's great. But just going a different path in the supermarket will take you to different items and will create different experiences. So that's a simple way of disrupting yourself. Just do something a little bit different, like take a different commute, do something different. That disrupts you, and that creates new experiences.
Okay. So what happens then? We just start finding new ways.
Yeah, yeah. You find new ways, and it just, you know, it makes you step outside of your box. So this is unthinkable,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
So going new paths is unthinkable, and it doesn't. You don't need to climb Mount Kilimanjaro or Mount Everest each day, but you can do small things that disrupt you, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it can be as simple as you know, I always talk about the cold water.
Yeah,
I go into the cold water, and that's unthinkable, and it's uncomfortable. So when you do something uncomfortable, you expand what's possible for you.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I take people to the cold water, because it's really easy, because people feel it's so hard to do that, and then they do it and they are so excited, energized. And actually, it's the opposite happens of what you think, because you, like in the waves, you surrender to the cold. So you don't fight it. So it becomes really easy. It's more like a meditation.
Huh. And what does the cold do for us in the long run?
Yeah, there are many. There is a lot of research done through, you know, Wim Hof is a famous person that, yeah, it's called the Wim Hof method.
Mm-hmm.
And there must be they did a lot of research around him and what it does, and there are many health benefits, and it's yeah, there are 1,000 benefits. You know, you have less stress, your body is more alkaline, your health is so I get less ill, I get less sick, I'm stronger, I feel mentally stronger, I feel it gives you dopamine. So you feel really excited. So it's good against, and you know, it's antidepressant.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So there, I almost.
So when did you start doing that, and how did you come in terms with that?
Yeah. So I did it as a child. So I was always drawn to the cold water as a child, and I've done it. I've jumped in, not in the winter, but I jumped in the coldest waters, where, you know, in the mountain streams, we hiked a lot. So I jumped in the cold water a lot. So I did that as a child. But like 7-8 years ago, when I started this journey with the book, I discovered Wim Hof on a podcast. And then I restarted this, what I've been doing as a child. And so, yes, so for me, it was something I did because I surf. So in surfing, you spend, if you surf in France, you spend a lot of time in the cold water. I remember it was 2005, so a long time ago, before it was popular doing Wim Hof. I went on a trip, on a surf trip with a Swiss friend, and it was April, so it was like between 40-45 Fahrenheit, the water, or just below 50. So it was below 50 Fahrenheit, and we just went surfing every day, all day long, in the wetsuit. But when you enter in the wetsuit, the cold water comes in first.
Okay.
and we were in campgrounds and or not in campgrounds, so we didn't have a facility to take a hot shower. And when we came home after 2 weeks, we decided not to ever take warm showers again. So we did that for a time, and it was May or April, and we went swimming in Switzerland in a cold lake. It was really cold. So
did
I've
you ever
done
go back
that
to warm showers?
yeah. After a few months, we went back to warm showers. But yeah, I've done that before without even realizing that it was something special.
So I'm jumping around here. Do you take people on outings? Do you take people on adventures where they express or they really reach into themselves for greater power, greater ability, or face.
Yeah. So far I have only done two events. One was with the cold water, and then I took a group every week. I took a group on Tuesday mornings in Zurich to the cold water. It was just a meetup. Yeah. I just had a group chat and just said, hey, Tuesday morning at 7 we meet before they went to the job. And so, but not many people show up because it's really uncomfortable. So it's not a mass. It's not something for the masses yet.
But you're saying you want people to feel the discomfort because of disruption, right?
Yeah, but I want to teach more to surrender to discomfort. Actually, it's more easing in. It's not fighting. The people that are not used to it, they will hyperventilate, but that's exactly the opposite. So you actually do deep breathing into your belly, right? So it's not the fight or flight mode. It's more the parasympathetic nervous system.
Okay.
So when you breathe through the nose, so at night. That's calming. That's relaxing.
Yes.
So that's actually, it's not fighting. It's more in a state of relaxation. Hmm. But in the mind, you have to step outside of your comfort zone, which is really amazing. The feeling.
Hmm.
And I'm not saying that you should be outside of your comfort zone all day long. Actually, 2 minutes in the cold gives you all the benefit.
Oh, really? Just 2 minutes?
Huberman, the Huberman Lab. He's a famous podcaster. He said that
I really enjoy his work. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And he's a scientist, and he said 11 minutes in a whole week would be enough, but
really?
That means in a few sessions. And I don't do it daily. This cold water now, it's too warm anyway, so it doesn't matter. So I don't do the ice baths in summer. I just do it when the water is cold. But in the mountain streams, it's always cold. But yeah, so what I'm saying is that so little time is necessary outside of comfort zone to get the benefit.
I understand. That's great to know, actually, for some of us who are a little bit shy about doing that.
Yeah, and actually I learned, I think also from Huberman, he says that actually, if you have a bowl, like a salad bowl, and you fill it with ice, and you just enter your face in the cold water, in the icy water, and you stay there for 10 seconds until you get like this ice cream headache, you know, and you can repeat a few cycles, you will get the same benefits as if you take a cold shower or a cold bath, just because there is so much happening in the face.
And being him, he's probably tested it all and marked up the neurological effects and so on.
Yes.
I'll ask you something else, because I noticed you do masterminds, and I know that's an old metaphysical plan for people to manifest from way back when. Is yours related to that? Would you like to talk to people about that kind of grouping that you do?
Yes. So it's not really something big. I'm just starting out. So I've only been doing that for 2 years.
Okay.
Right. And so my idea is just to have fun and explore outside of the comfort zone. For me, this is a fun process. So I try to get people to this stepping outside of the comfort zone.
Do you get them to disrupt themselves?
Yes. So that's my idea. So now, my older brother is a really good paragliding pilot. So he does. He's an instructor, a paragliding instructor, and he does tandem flights. So I challenge people to do something unthinkable. So I challenge them to do something. I hope that my book inspires them to do something unthinkable. And the person who has the most amazing challenge, the most inspiring challenge, will get a flight, a tandem flight in Switzerland with my brother. So that's
wonderful.
So I want to inspire people to do a challenge for themselves. And of course, it's hard to select what's the most amazing challenge, but it's a challenge that inspires others. So that's
feedback on that. Are you getting quite a bit of response?
I just started today. Today's the first day of this challenge. I give people until the 28th of July to turn in a picture of this challenge.
That's a great idea. Maybe I'll come up with one.
Yeah, and I have a dear friend of mine who I interviewed for the book. He became a friend through the book, and yeah, we just kept in touch. And he's really inspirational. And his name is Mustafa Salameh.
Okay.
And he's actually taking my book on Mount Kilimanjaro in July.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he's Mustafa Salameh is fascinating. He was born as a refugee.
Okay.
His family is Jordan. His family is Palestinian, but he climbed the highest mountains of the world. So the seven summits. So it's the highest peak of each continent.
Wow! And he did that on purpose to push his own disruption to a higher level.
No, he had a dream to pray for peace on the highest point, and then he found out that it was Mount Everest. So he had a big vision to do something for world peace. And out of that, he climbed the seven summits, which is the highest peak of each continent.
Wow.
And then he skied. He learned how to ski at 39, and this is unthinkable for someone from Jordan. And he skied to the North and South Pole and did all of Greenland. So yeah, he's someone really inspiring. And he told me that he would take the my book on the Mount Kilimanjaro. So he takes people, he guides people to those places.
Okay.
Yeah.
For world peace. Do you find that most of the people, let me see, when people are pushing their envelope or people are disrupting their comfort zones and so on, do you think they just can't stop over time, that they remain an evolving critter? Is that what you call it?
I think that so when you expand your comfort zone becomes bigger. Right. When you get outside of your comfort zone, actually your comfort zone gets bigger. And then you, I feel it's like a mindset. It's a growth mindset. So some people have like a fixed mindset. Some people have a growth mindset. And I think when you have a growth mindset, you will, as they say, keep pushing the envelope, right? So you will keep doing that. And it's like a muscle to step outside of your comfort zone, or as a friend of mine said, befriend the uncomfortable. It's like a muscle. So you keep doing that, and actually it becomes quite easy, you know, when you do it over and over, it becomes easy to surrender to it and do it again and again.
I have a funny story which came from a movie, or you've probably heard of it. You know, the big tsunami where 250,000 people were wiped out of, over in Asia. Do you remember that? Anyway, there was a movie called The Impossible, and I did not want to see it because I knew it was all about the coming apart of these people at a resort. And there was a family of five, and they were doctors, and they had three kids. And the woman said that my children were overprotected. I overprotected them all the time. They got split up in the tsunami, and they all came together near the end. And later, she said kind of what you're saying, which is none of her kids are afraid of anything now. They go where they want. They go hugely in traveling and so on. She said, you know, it was a good thing, right?
Yeah, it's interesting. Going back to my book, I was in the tsunami in Japan, in Fukushima.
Oh, were you? Oh, my God.
Yeah, I was there. And for me, it was the reason to come home from Japan. So there is always in crisis, in outside crisis, there is something that you have to deal from the inside.
So what happened? Why did you want to go home? Did you want to be safe, or did you just want to tune in with your family? Or
no, I went to Japan for the wrong reasons. So I went for career, for ego, you know.
Oh,
to
okay.
So I my gut, my intuition told me not to go to Japan, and so I just overpowered my intuition with my mind and thought I needed to be there to be successful. So that was kind of my pattern that I always went through. So I did something really unthinkable, really difficult, and out from the ego, not from the heart. And this is how I see it differently now. Now I do it more from the heart and not from a place of ego.
And when you say place of ego, that was the challenge, right?
Yeah, the challenge. So mm-hmm. I've done Ironman, and I've done this, marathons and ultra marathons. I'm not a pro, but I have done those challenges. And yeah, sometimes you do it out of ego. So it's not a healthy place to do it out of ego. There's always some ego involved, mm-hmm. right? Because we are, as humans, we are a unity. Mm-hmm. And the ego keeps us apart from others. Mm-hmm. But if when the ego dies, actually, then, you know, when it dissolves, we become one, right?
Isn't that wonderful?
Yeah. So my shaman told me that when the ego dies, you get out of this life alive, right?
Oh,
because
okay.
Then we are a part of something bigger. And I feel what I'm doing now is not from a place of ego. It's more from the heart. Mm-hmm. What I'm doing now, my unthinkable now is I'm not so excited anymore. I don't do these big events like these big triathlons. I say it again. I do it from the heart and feel more into it and follow my intuition instead of, you know, just wanting to make something big happen.
The other interesting thing about that is it's very subtle, isn't it? I mean, you've got a big heart. I can feel it. But also, I think that you're giving to humanity. and I'm going, you probably are going to do group stuff for that reason, are you not? Because aren't we contagious? When I get really courageous, the people beside me get courageous, right?
Yes. Yeah. I mean, I certainly hope that I'm doing that. You know, I hope that I can, you know, spread this you know, love. I talk in the book. I talk about flow as find love
like
and
that
oneness
part.
within. Yeah. So I think that when you look at wars and divorces and all of that, that all is connected to ego, right? So as long as and I say I went through divorce, and divorce is nothing else than a war in mini format, right? Mm-hmm. It happens the same, and it's just so many people have traumas from childhood, or you know, from other generations. We have traumas, and then we just get triggered by other people. So when we love ourselves and we deal with our traumas, then we don't bring it on to the next generation. So I feel we have to build this relationship with ourselves. So the self-love, self-care is the step mm-hmm. to break the cycles of having traumas from one generation to the next, because it's my children, it's not their responsibility to deal with my traumas, right? So I feel everyone has to...
Except that, wait a sec, when we're talking about wars, I keep going, here we go again, we kill each other off. Here we go again, we kill each other off.
Yeah.
So it is our responsibility to deal with those impulses.
Yeah.
And I think you're really creating a lot of evolution, my friend.
Yeah, I mean, the war, if you look at it, some leaders they're deeply troubled, so they have traumas.
Mm-hmm.
And then this creates more and more. Yeah, this creates the war, right? So, but if everyone works on their traumas and loves themselves, there is no hatred going around. So it's really oneness, right? So I think if we work on ourselves, we can create this unity as one humanity, and that sounds really idealistic, and it is.
I think when you say work on ourselves, that's actually a very loving art, isn't it?
I'm a jerk
today, and I really love myself enough to figure that out, right? Do you see what I mean?
Yeah, but I don't say but. Many people say but, because then it's just we destroy the but always destroys the whole conversation before that, right? So I don't mean to say but now I lost my thread, but yeah, I don't know. I got lost.
You just reminded me of something though, because you're talking about the waves and the flow and so on, and the butt gets in the way of the waves, doesn't it? Stops the flow.
Yeah, yeah. So in flow, it's when you act from the mind, from the logic mind, you cannot be in flow. We always try to plan everything, and planning is the opposite of flow. You can only create space, but you cannot say, oh, I have time for flow between 8 and 9. It doesn't happen like that. You can only create space, and then whatever happens, happens, and you have to surrender to that.
But and what so I wanna... disappointed or whatever, it can be in your flow and
yes.
move through it. Do you have advice? We're almost at the end, but I really enjoy talking to you. Maybe you'll come back again. But I would like that very much. But do you have any advice for people?
Related to what? Because we talked about a lot of things. So
of course we did, and there's more.
Yeah. So one advice about self-love is it sounds so woo-woo, or you know, it sounds maybe, I don't know, too spiritual for some people. And I feel self-love is like taking self-care. So loving yourself is doing something, being kind to yourself. So I think for me that's a daily practice. And you can just take a little time for yourself, and that's taking self-care. So feeling into yourself and taking time for yourself, being grateful for what you have, who you are. And then the other thing is letting go of experiences and things that don't serve you.
Yeah.
And letting go
is very hard sometimes.
So letting go is passive. Letting mm-hmm. go, it's passive. But we are so conditioned to hold on to things. we hold on to materials and money and titles and things and people, even if we don't even like them. So many people are in relationships that they hold on to bad relationships because it's more scary to let go and maybe be alone for some time.
It's about security again, isn't
yes.
it?
Yes. Mm-hmm. But when you love yourself, you are always you're always in good company. So I really enjoy the time with myself, mm-hmm. and it almost becomes a luxury. I enjoy it so much that I don't even need someone else to have fun, right? It's not that I want to be alone all the time, but I just feel really happy by myself. I can be in a restaurant by myself. I enjoy, you know, and this is the foundation for any relationship. So if you love yourself, you have a better relationship with your kids. And you, so what's important for me as a divorced dad is I have to let go my kids, but let them go with love. And mm-hmm. I'm always present, maybe not physically, but I'm present, you know, with my love for them. But it's not a love that is conditional. So I don't say, I only feel the love if I get this back. So mm-hmm. true love is unconditional love, right? So it's about letting go and love without getting anything back. So that's the real love.
Yeah, that is real love. Now, you tell people how to get hold of you, because I think that they would like to enjoy more of you, even yes. if you're happy alone in the restaurant.
Yeah, I also love to talk to people, but I'm like ambivert, so I need a lot of time with myself. Sure. And then I go out there and I talk to anyone. So that's my kids are always inspired because I meet so many people, and I create relationships just in the strangest of places. In I don't know. So I have both.
An amazing ability to see that spark in each people, to see that unique light in each person. That's a
yeah,
gift, you know.
Yeah, I think that's a gift that I got from my father. I learned from my father, and you know, to see in each person a spark, and this is really a muscle that I trained a lot. So it sounds cheesy, but I found for each person I meet, I find a compliment that comes from my heart, and I'm not saying it to get something, but sometimes I walk through the street and just feel full of love. I just uh-huh. look at the guy and say, "Oh, I love you." You know, I it's internal. So I don't say it out loud, but it's more like I feel love.
What a great gift to spread around the world.
and if you ask me how you can find, so I use this my website is unthinkableliving.com.
Unthinkableliving, okay.
.com and unthinkableliving I heard it from a friend, and I think in life we shouldn't be a noun. We shouldn't be boxes, right? So when people ask you, "What are you?" and you say, "I'm a doctor, I'm a this, I'm a carpenter," you are in a box. But I feel we should be a verb. So always evolving, always, you know, always growing. So that's why unthinkable living, because it's like a state of being. So that's why unthinkableliving.com. You can find me there on LinkedIn, on Instagram. And read my book, Unthinkable Life Teachings from a Soul Surfer, because I think it's an easy way to expand your mind and get inspired to find your unthinkable, because unthinkable for you is different than for me. And so I think everyone has this spark.
Soul Surfer is wonderfully movable. Yeah. Soul Surfer, that's wonderful. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, So there are different levels. Like the soul surfer is the surfer that doesn't surf competitively. So that only goes for, you know, for the feeling. But also soul surfer is like being connected with our soul, right? Mm-hmm. And be that, so like surfing the universe. So it has more layers.
I like that a lot. And it is in motion, right?
Yes. Yes. I think there is a lot of feeling in it. Uh-huh. And you can just read the book to get inspired to do something crazy, to do the unthinkable. But you can go deeper and go into feeling in oneness and self-love. So yeah, so this book is I think it's very inspiring.
It's wonderful, yes.
And so that's
how we
can
read. Thank you for coming on to Paradigm Shifters. I really have enjoyed talking to you, but you've also inspired me. Thank you.
And I'm looking forward to see your Unthinkable this summer.
Yeah, great. All right. Well, thank you very much, Marcel Kuhn. Thank you so much. Been Unthinkable.
Thank you so much, Veronica. It was amazing.
It was fun. I really had a good time, and I hope you did.
Yeah, I did.
Many blessings. Keep going.
Thank you so much. Looking forward to hear from you again soon.
You will.
All the best.
Thank you.